The Guardian.
Hello, welcome to Football Weekly Extra Extra, which is a chance for you to listen to Chapter 7 of Detective Wilson. And we thought we'd chuck a little Q&A with me and Barry on the top of it. Barry is standing by in his house. How are you, Barry?
Technically, I'm sitting by on a chair, but I'm fine. Thank you. I took delivery of a new mattress yesterday. I decided to spend some money on a quite expensive mattress, mm-hmm. I think. And had my first night's sleep in it last night, and it was very exciting. I slept very well.
Okay, so I put out on Twitter for questions from people. Are you ready to be grilled? Are you ready to be grilled by the public?
Grill me like a slice of bread with some cheese on it.
How long should a half of football be?
I know what this is in reference to, because I've spent the morning arguing with people I don't know on the internet about a subject I don't care particularly much about. Specifically, Gordon Taylor's suggestion that maybe when football returns, halves will be shorter than 45 minutes. His suggestion has been largely rubbished, and I think that's because Gordon Taylor, who's very unpopular, came up with it, not because it's a bad idea. Players aren't going to be fit. They will be at greater risk of injury, muscle injuries, maybe being subjected to lazy late challenges by equally unfit opponents. So I think it's quite a good idea. And my attention span is getting shorter and shorter the older I get. So I already thought football matches were too long before this pandemic. I think 35 minutes a half would be plenty.
In an ideal world, how long would, I don't know, Burnley, Crystal Palace be for you?
15 minutes aside. I mean, to be honest, I kind of enjoy the build-up and the aftermath and all the white noise and people getting angry about things more than I enjoy many of the games themselves. So I think after 20 minutes, we should be able to have a vote, you know, on when halftime should be.
Here's a question from Jim. Who is the best drunk, Max or Barry?
Well, define best. I'm probably the most frequent drunk.
You're very consistent.
I've seen you at your worst.
Yeah.
And you've seen me at my worst.
Yeah.
I think the only time we've both been at our worst together is one night when we went on the batter in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of us covered ourselves in glory. I think we're both pretty decent drunks. We don't get aggressive or leery.
I don't think I get as slurry as you, but I don't know.
Yeah, probably not. And I don't get as glassy-eyed as you. I'd say we're both pretty amiable drunks.
Yeah. Connor says, with Max's newfound viral music fame, does Barry now admit that Max is actually the funny one?
No.
Actually, I've just released my second single and it's really not gone down as well as the first. And I'm really quite disappointed with the fans. It's as if you write one song about getting fisted and if you don't do the next one about that, they don't want to know. You try and take it in a new direction and the fans aren't interested.
Yeah, well, going straight to a concept album after one hit single was always going to be a dodgy move. I mean, I think you're somewhat hampered by the fact that the production, the video isn't great. It's someone holding a phone up at the back of a very large auditorium.
Do you think I should have redone it? Should I have redone it? Because I thought the crowd was good. I thought people would see a crowd and get nostalgic about it.
Well, possibly. Maybe it needs to be remastered.
Yeah, producer Jonathan says it's almost as if Alex Horn was the key. Baz says, when you and the current Mrs. Rushton retire to a palatial country estate after a long, successful career in broadcasting and education, will you build Barry a granny flat out the back? I will, yeah.
I'll probably need one, to be fair. I have. There's a friend of mine at home in Burr. He and his wife bought a nice big house out the country, and there's a little granny flat attached to it,
mm-hmm.
which isn't occupied, and I've already asked for first dibs on that, because let's face it, I'm not going to take a wife at this stage, am I, Max?
Well, I don't know.
And
I
I'm likely to be alone.
I don't know.
In my dotage.
I think you need to, I mean, I was going to say get yourself out there. That's not the right advice currently, but I don't think you should give up on that yet.
But I'm too set in my ways. Right. I'm not prepared to make the compromises that are necessary to have a successful relationship.
Me and Mrs. Rushton had an argument about an egg the other day. I don't think you'd have stood for it, to be perfectly honest. Can I tell you the scene?
Yes.
So quite often Jamie makes me lunch, especially so coming back from the radio, it's, you know, she says, would you like some lunch? And I say, yes, please. And she says, I'll have a bacon, lettuce and avocado sandwich. But quite often she'll have made it by 1 p.m. So by the time I get home, it's been sitting there for quite a long time. But I can't be annoyed because my wife has made me lunch. But really, I don't want it to be served half an hour before I get to eat it, because then it's like, you know, like a breakfast buffet that's just been sitting there for ages. And I didn't want an egg. And I expressly said I didn't want an egg. And then there was an egg on my plate. And then Jamie takes it quite personally if you don't eat everything. So I ate the egg out of courtesy. And then an hour later, I brought up the fact that I only ate the egg because I didn't want her to be sad that she'd cooked an egg that I didn't want to eat. And she got very angry about the whole situation. Said I should be more grateful.
And that, in a nutshell, or indeed an eggshell, is why I will never, ever get married. I take it, by the way you loudly told me that story, that Jamie is not home at the moment.
She's home. She's home. But we're over it now. We've debriefed the argument. Henry says, please, Max, so I can stop doing this. Poppadoms or bread? Which I should shout, really.
Poppadoms or naan bread?
Poppadoms or bread? Just poppadoms or bread. What would you choose?
Poppadoms.
Okay.
I always find when I'm having a curry, naan bread is superfluous. I never eat much of it. It's too filling and it takes up room that could be used with nicer things.
Ben says, what are your favourite pasta shapes and do you think the shape of the pasta has an impact on taste?
I definitely think it has an impact on taste, and my favourite shape is the little seashell ones. I don't know the technical term. Because the meaty sauce gets inside the shells.
True. All right. Thanks, Barry. You can go back to doing whatever you want to do this afternoon. And you guys can listen to Chapter 7 of Detective Wilson. Detective Wilson, Chapter 7, Perverting the Pyramid. In a cafe opposite Football Weekly Police Department, a man sat stirring his coffee, thinking about the past 15 hours. It was supposed to be a simple job. Get the memory stick with the leaked information. He'd planned to follow the kid for a few days, figure out where he was keeping the stick, and then slip in and grab it undetected. Unfortunately, that had all gone out the window. The kid had gotten nervous, suspected someone was following him, and sought protection from those ramble idiots. He informed his client about the latest development, and that's when he got the message. Get the memory stick, by any means necessary, price no issue. He knew he didn't have long, so he lured the kid to Roots Hall, pretending to have more information. He had gambled that he'd have the memory stick on him for safekeeping, but he was wrong. After taking care of the cocky little bastard, he headed to the Mundial office, only to encounter another bump in the road. Some Welsh guy had surprised him and he'd had to improvise. Now there were two bodies, and his client was getting nervous. A text alert rang out on his phone. Get the evidence. No more mistakes. He sent a message back. Where? How? As he sat and waited for the response, he saw a dishevelled-looking man across the room, sitting over a plate of Yorkshire puddings, baked beans, and at least four different meats. The man smiled at him with his mouth full. The killer looked back to his phone in disgust. The message had arrived. The lawyer will meet you in the car park. Don't mess this up. He finished his coffee, put his money on the table, and headed for the door, blissfully unaware that he'd aroused the suspicion of a Scandinavian special agent with rather experimental tastes. Inside FWPD, Prosecutor Rushton had had a strange old day. He'd received an anonymous tip in the early hours of the morning informing him that Sam Diss had been murdered and the culprit was celebrated ex-detective Jonathan Wilson. They'd also provided intimate details of the crime scene and where to find the murder weapon. Although he'd never admit it, Rushton immediately saw this as an opportunity. During his short career, he'd gone up through the ranks like Leicester City, leaving competitors like Goldstein and Lovejoy eating his dust. This kind of high-profile conviction would almost certainly wrap his future ambitions in a nice big bow. He could almost see himself and the current Mrs. Rushton sipping champagne on a brand new yacht named the Dion Dublin in the very near future. The tipster had claimed they were working for internal affairs, trying to root out corruption in the FWPD. At the start, he didn't have any reason to doubt them. With everything that they provided, it was clear that Wilson was guilty and that the bear was covering for him. But their most recent request was making him uncomfortable. He'd read the text again. They have evidence that will prove Wilson's guilt beyond a shadow of a doubt. It'll be on a memory stick. They're going to try and cover it up. You must not let that happen. Get your hands on it, and one of our men will meet you in the car park. The nervous Rushton wiped the sweat from his brow, got up from his desk and headed over to the fishbowl, a glass soundproof interview room in the middle of the office. He could see Barry, Wilson and Lloyd Hughes deep in discussion. John Fisher, the head of the cyber unit, sat frantically typing at his laptop, a memory stick plugged into the side. Max was nervous, so to calm his nerves, he let his mind wander back to the image of him and the current Mrs. Rushton enjoying themselves atop the Dion Dublin. He'd made up his mind. But how was he going to get his hands on the stick? He looked around the office and found the answer to his prayers leering into a microwave in the midst of cooking a Ginster's sausage roll. Langdon. Perfect. Inside the fishbowl, DCI Glenning was furious that Wilson had gone rogue. "You've made me look a prize prick, John. You know that." After discovering Ellis's body at Mundy Owl, Wilson had had no choice but to call it in and hand over the memory stick. He tried to explain. "I just wanted to find Sam's killer." Baz was apoplectic. "Listen here, son. I took you on loan, partnered you with Flo, and stuck you in a fecking system to catch the killer. But you went off. You went rogue. You went, his fury preventing him from finding the words. Flo helped him out. "You went Balotelli." "That's fucking right, Wilson. You went fucking Balotelli, and now Ellis is dead." Fisher held up his finger to get their attention. He'd hacked into the memory stick. They all gathered around the techie. "Well, what is it?" Baz demanded. Finally, they might discover the motive for Sam's murder. Fisher paused for a moment and furrowed his brow in confusion. "I think it's a fixture list. Yeah, it's a fixture list for the next 5 years of the Championship League One and League Two." Silence swept the room. That was not what they were expecting. "That's it?" asked Flo. "A bloody fixture list?" Baz once again turned his ire on Wilson. "Is this some sort of joke?" Fisher raised his finger once more. "Wait, there's something wrong. Look at these kickoff times. They're all over the place. Cheltenham v Port Vale at 9:45 p.m. on a Wednesday. Cambridge v Southend at 1 p.m. on a Friday." He scrolled through fixture after fixture, month after month. 5 years of logistical nightmares. Wilson had an idea. "Search the words Legacy League." The techie typed in the words and a list of teams appeared. It looked like the Premier League, but a few teams had changed. Bournemouth, Brighton and Burnley had been replaced with Leeds, Forest and Derby. There were other changes as well. It seemed to be a list of so-called big teams, but no one else. Most alarming was what was written at the bottom in big red letters. "No trap door." Finally, the penny dropped for Wilson. Amazon planned to run the Football League into the ground with fixture chaos and congestion so that viewing figures and attendances drop. After 5 years, they could wash their hands of the lower leagues and present a shiny new plan for the top tier. A legacy league. No promotion, no relegation. Big game after big game, over and over again. It had been what broadcasters and even people from the top of UEFA and FIFA had wanted for years. Wilson outlined his suspicions to the rest of the group. Flo interjected, "But what about Sam? Why was he killed?" The detective sighed. "He must have got wind of this and wanted to take it public before they made the announcement." She was flabbergasted. "He was killed because of broadcasting rights." Wilson nodded ruefully. "Money in football has been dirty for years. This is just the natural extension." For a moment, they all sat in silence, horrified by the revelation. Suddenly, the sound of the fire alarm ripped through the office. DS Mark Langdon burst into the room. "Sorry to interrupt, boss, but we need to evacuate. You all head to the rendezvous point. I can take the evidence to lock up and meet you there." "For fuck's sake," said Baz. He grabbed the memory stick and handed it to Langdon. "Thanks, Mark." The four of them were herded out of the building as Langdon strode away. It would only be later on that Wilson would realise that wasn't the way to the evidence room at all. Chapter 8. You decide. Scandinavian Steel or Fool's Rushton. We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.